All right, welcome back to the Weekend Warrior Podcast presented by WTP Sports. This is episode 41, so that would be the Chris Sale and Kelly Olynyk episode. And of course, who could forget the Celtics great Michael Olowokandi as well, wore number 41. So it's all three of those guys. This tonight we have a great show from WEI and from the Hashtag Dork Podcast. We have Rich Keefe coming on the show. So that's really exciting. He's on the 2 to 6 show, which is the Dale and Holly show with Rich Keefe. It's kind of a weird name, but that's the way, I don't know, they had some branding or something like that. So, but he is on there. He is, you know, one of the hosts and does a great job, and I really appreciate him coming on as well. He comes on and talks, we talk some Celtics, we talk some Patriots, we talk even a little bit of Red Sox, and we hit some of the Ron Borges stuff too. So, also after his interview, we have This Week in Sports History, and we have the three-minute drill. So stick around for that, and hope you enjoy the show. Let's get it started. Okay, we're going to get right into the Rich Keefe interview. Again, it's a great interview, and we cover pretty much everything that's going on in Boston sports right now. So take a listen. Hope you enjoy it. All right, so we're going to welcome on the show Rich Keefe. He is the one of the hosts of the Dale and Holly with Rich Keefe show from 2 to 6 on WEI, and he's also the host of the Hashtag Dork podcast. So thanks for coming on, Rich. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. So, tons to talk about in the Boston sports scene. I do want to talk about one thing though. The Ron Borges article, I think, is not that it's comical. I don't want to dance on anyone's grave for sure, but you know, he's been a Patriots hater for so long that I feel like for Boston fans at least, it's kind of like, oh, that's kind of, you know, we're not super upset. I feel like.
I know it. He really is a guy who a lot of people have had their issues with. He's had issues too. I mean, you go back to the plagiarism stuff. You know, he is, definitely does not have a perfect record. And I think that it's just an example of a guy being really lazy. Like, it's just, this is not something that you should do. And I'm with you. I'm not one of these guys that would ever say, oh, like, you should lose his job, or like, I'm going to celebrate the fact that he may lose his job. I'm not going to do that because something could happen to me in a few years or tomorrow, right? And then I don't want people doing the same thing to me. People do make mistakes. However, what he did was reckless. Like, you don't take a phone number, you don't, like, a guy that you've never seen before or you've never gotten a message from this number, and you take that, you use that, and then you write a story on it. And then the part where he says multiple sources, yeah, might be the worst part of all, because now not only is he dumb that he got duped, but he's a liar. Like, you only had one source and it wasn't even a real source.
Yeah, so
I think he's a guy you should make fun of, and he should have to face this, but I'm not gonna, you know, call for anybody's job, because I think people do make mistakes.
Right, I agree with that. And I think, you know, people are blowing the sources out of proportion. Like, everyone talks about, I think in the article it was crazy, but everyone talks about, well, you know, to run with the story, you really need to have multiple sources, which is true, except if you have it, like, from the player or his agent. Like, that, to me, is a different story. Like,
no, my point is that, yeah, if you only have one source and it's a good source, you still go with the story, but say from a source. Right. Because if he said, he adds the S to it, and it's a great thing to do in reporting, because it could be two sources or it could be 1,000 sources. Right. By just saying, exactly, you have more than one, it kind of like gives it a little bit more gravitas. But in this case, you're lying about that because you only had one and it turns out it was just some random guy.
Right. Well, the thing with me is that it's like lazy to me is the perfect way to put it. I mean, he's got to know somebody that has Don Yee's number, doesn't he? And he can't just like text that person and say, hey, you don't have to give me Don Yee's number, but I think I got a message from a guy saying he was Don Yee. Here's the number. Is this Don Yee's number? And like, not only that, but the text messages were like not spelled correctly. The grammar was all wrong. And I'm like, don't you think the agent, like an agent, would not be making those grammatical errors? I mean, I realize it's text message, but like, even still, this guy's like an agent, like, you know, of some pretty prominent people. You feel like over text message, you'd be a little bit more, right, you know, professional, you know?
I would think so too. I mean, there were so many red flags in there. I mean, the phone number is an obvious one. And I don't know the answer to whether or not Ron Borges has Don Yee's phone number or has his real phone number and why he wouldn't go through there or just ask him, hey, is this a new number? Like, there's so many different things you could do. Or as you said, maybe you ask somebody else, be like, hey, did you realize Don Yee have a new number or something? And he didn't do any of that. And I guess this guy, so Nick in Boston is the one that pretended to be Don Yee. And I guess it was sort of a longer con. Like, he was talking to him about the Hall of Fame for a little bit with Ty Law. Then he mentioned the Jimmy Garoppolo deal. And then he gets into this Brady stuff. And he fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. I mean, catfish. He got catfished. Yeah, and it's embarrassing. But it's also one where you really wonder, the next article he writes about the Patriots, is anybody going to take it seriously? Because you're immediately going to think about this story and wonder, did he get duped? Does he have an agenda? Like, what's going on with it? I think it's going to be really difficult for him to write specifically about the Patriots again.
Right. Well, and I actually wrote an article about this over the weekend, just basically saying that, Tomasi skated free and, didn't get suspended. And he made some half-hearted apology, but didn't get suspended for it, didn't lose his job for it, got promoted a year later for it. Like, it's just one of those things where the timing here is everything. If Nick in Boston doesn't come out the day that our article comes out and says it's fake, people are probably running with the story, and it's the biggest story in the news last week. Tom Brady's gonna hold out unless he gets Jimmy Garoppolo money. And as far as everyone knows, it's true because Ron Borges is reporting and saying that he has it from sources. And yeah, so 3 months later, it comes out and says it's not true. But at that point, the damage is already done. The news cycle, it's already been chewed up and spit out. And so, yeah, there's a footnote at the bottom that says, oh, by the way, this isn't true. But at that point, the damage is already done. And so everyone already feels like Brady feels that way. And if he ends up taking less money, which he obviously will, I assume, if he signs a contract, people will say, well, he got bullied into it by the Patriots or something like that, basically giving credence to the whole idea.
Yeah, the timing is really strange or interesting, I guess, by Nick, because if he had waited, because I believe the story came out, Thursday night, right? The Borges story. And then Friday, he's on the air. And you said, well, if he just waited even until Monday, like if you just allow it to take place Friday, all the national shows pick it up over the weekend, it continues to be a big story. And then even though you had others like Tommy Curran and some of the other Patriots beat writers spoke out and they had articles there saying, hey, according to our sources, this is bogus. Like, I think Curran's quote was, it's off the reservation. Like, this is insane. However, you know how the national media works. Like, they would just take the Borges story. That's way juicier. And they're going to run with that. They're like, according to the Boston Herald, this is what's happening. And it could have lived on for at least 48, 72 hours. But as it turns out, it ends up just being a hoax story, and Ron Borges ends up looking the worst. And I wonder what's going to happen to him, just because the Boston Herald just sold to a new owner or new company or whatever. So they're probably trying to figure out who's going to keep their jobs anyway, like, let alone whether you had like one of these big stories that proved to be wrong. But yeah, I mean, that for a few days, that was the story, and it was, pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's wild. I mean, it really is. Like, you're right, the timing is pretty crazy. And I know you work for EEI, so you're not allowed to say anything bad or otherwise about Tomasi, but I thought the
No, that's not true. No, that's not true. We've never been told we can't say anything about him. I didn't know him. I didn't meet him until working at WEEI. Obviously, I remembered the story when the story came out, and that was brutal. It was wrong, and people still run with it. Like, we were, Super Bowl week, we were doing simulcasts with a station in Philadelphia, and they're asking us about them taping practices. We're like, what? That's not true. That didn't happen. But they remember the story, and they didn't remember when the Herald had to apologize front and back page saying it was completely wrong. But what I will say about Tomasi is that was 10, 11 years ago. That happened, and still he has to deal with that every day. It's amazing. Like, I've hosted a couple of shows with him, and I'll be on Twitter and I'll say something like, hey, me and Tomasi on from whatever, And every comment after that is, oh, is he going to make something up? Is he going to do this? Like, what is he lying about today? And I'm like, oh my God. Like, he made a huge mistake. Like, I'm not saying it's a small mistake. That was a huge mistake. Like, it put the Patriots in a really bad spot. But, man, people have not let him forget it, though. That's for sure, for the last decade, which is amazing.
That is true. I mean, it's crazy. Like, you know, yeah. People just, yeah, it's not.
They're not going to forget. That's right.
They never will. And it's it's never going away. And the same thing with Borges. If he does keep his job or he continues writing, that's with them into the grave. That's just the way it goes, you know, especially around here. So,
yeah.
So anyways, let's move away from journalism and we'll go to the actual sports here. So I guess we'll talk about the Celtics first. They're a freaking train wreck heading into the All-Star game. They've really lost three in a row. They're just a flaming mess right now. And I think – so I have kind of a dual question for you.
Okay.
So it seems like, at least from what Stevens has said, that Hayward is not coming back. I wonder, do you think if he can, should he? And do you think they have a legitimate shot at getting out of the East without him?
All right, so the first part on Gordon Hayward, I do think he's going to come back, and I think he should if he can. I think Brad Stevens is doing the right thing, though, by not putting any pressure on him, not putting any kind of a timetable, by saying, hey, he's not going to come back. That's the perfect answer for him. Meanwhile, he can work his way back, and if he does show up, it's great. It's literally the opposite of what the Red Sox would do. Right. The Red Sox would have somebody get hurt, and they're like, oh, yeah, 3 weeks, he'll be back. And then 3 weeks goes by, and they're like, well, where is he? And they're like, oh, maybe another week or two. And you're like, well, you did this to him. Like, what are you making excuses for? So smart by Stevens to say that. I think my prediction is Hayward will come back, not going to be in like a starting role, but maybe you can get 20 minutes from him, and maybe he can still be a productive offensive player. As far as can they win the East without him, I think they can. I think it's going to be really, really difficult. I think Toronto, who nobody's talking about, is having a great year. They're the best home team. So if they finish the year with home court, they're going to be tough. I know the NBA, the league, is going to want either LeBron or even the Celtics to be there just for the finals ratings purposes. But Toronto is playing great. LeBron obviously is going to have to be there with his new team and the Celtics. So it's a three-team race right now, even if Hayward doesn't come back. Celtics are playing the worst right now, but they still got, you know, they're going to a week off, and then they're going to have whatever it is, 25 or however many games, 30 games they have remaining. I think they can right the ship from where they are right now. I think they can get better. And right now, I'm not as confident as I was 2 weeks ago, but right now I do still think they win the East. And maybe that's just me being a super fan of the team, but I think they can still win. I have enough faith in Kyrie Irving that he can carry them past the Cavs and the Raptors.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I'm with you on that. I think what's happened with Hayward has been a little scary. I just feel like hasn't been as good as he was early in the year, which makes sense. He's a young kid, and you know, he's hitting maybe that rookie wall a little bit. So maybe this week off will help him. The scariest thing for me is LeBron, because I don't know how much better on paper the team is after all the trades. But I know that LeBron is happier, and when he's happier and is willing to play hard, he can win a series basically by himself against pretty much anybody.
Yeah, no, he definitely can, and he's definitely happier right now. But, like, let's see what happens in another 20 games, and if, you know, Rodney Hood starts taking too many shots, or if Jordan Clarkson misses a key shot, like, all of a sudden LeBron might start to get upset. And you know, Kevin Love's coming back, and I like Kevin Love. I've always been a big Kevin Love fan, but they've had issues there, and they blamed him for like a lot of the defensive problems, which it's not all his fault, but they blamed him. And so when he comes back, that's going to have to be another adjustment that they're going to have to make. And so maybe that doesn't go very well, or maybe, you know, somebody's going to have to sit, and you know, that's going to be something that they're going to have to go through. So I'm still curious to see, like, the first game that they had against the Celtics where they played great, I don't know if they're going to be able to do that consistently going forward.
Right. Yeah, it's certainly a valid concern. So we're heading into All-Star weekend. So I just wondered if you had, I don't know if you had looked at the lineups at all for the slam dunk contest or the three point shootout. I wondered if you'd want to handicap them at all. If you thought we had a winner on either one.
All right. Give me the 3 point guys. Do you have them in front of you?
So 3 point guys, Eric Gordon, Klay Thompson, Paul George, Kyle Lowry, and I don't know the rest of the guys. I don't know. Those are the four guys that I looked at because I thought Paul George and Lowry was weird that they were on there because I thought, like, to me, it's like a Kyle Korver type, you know, of thing where it's like just the 3 point shooters. I was like, Paul George, what's he doing there, you know?
Okay. No, I think I got it. So it's Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, that's Eric Gordon, yes. Wayne Ellington, Paul George, Tobias Harris, Kyle Lowry, Klay Thompson. I think it's hard to go against Klay Thompson. Didn't he win it last year?
Gordon won it last year. Thompson won it the year before.
Okay, he won it the year before.
Yeah.
Give me Klay Thompson. I'm excited to see Booker and Beal in it. I think those are obviously two of the best shooters in the league as well. But I think, I mean, Klay Thompson is just such an unreal shooter. And once he gets going, I think he's going to win it.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense for sure. So how about the slam dunk contest? Do you have the –
Yeah, the slam dunk contest. I mean, Aaron Gordon. He won it last year, right? And he's not going to be in it because he's hurt.
Right. It's kind of
like the little guys, and this year, because remember they went through this thing recently where, you know, the Blake Griffins and some of like the big guys like Dwight Howard and like I don't like watching the big guys dunk. And this year they got Donovan Mitchell, they got Dennis Smith, they got Victor Oladipo along with Larry Nance. But the first three guys are all 6'4" and under.
Yeah.
And so I think I'll go with Dennis Smith. I'll go with the rookie at NC State. I think his dunks are going to look the coolest because of his size. So I'll take Dennis Smith.
Okay, I like that. You got the old Nate Robinson dunking over Spud Webb, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I will say I'm going actually Larry Nance on this one. Larry Nance Jr., I will say, because his dad won the inaugural slam dunk contest in 1984. It runs in the family. I mean, I think he'll get the extra bloodline numbers. You know what I mean?
The first father son duo to win the dunk contest. I like that.
And the NBA tries to play those things up. So
and both with the Cavs too. So that would be
true. That's a good point. Yeah, because Nance just got traded to the Cavs, right? So it's almost like trade him right before so we can
perfect timing.
That's good. I hadn't even thought about that.
That's a lot of work.
I'm just going to put off the Red Sox because I just can't stand the goddamn Red Sox. But I do want to talk just briefly about the Patriots. I know you've spent weeks talking about them, but I think for me personally, and there's a million different plays that I think we've gone back and forth on and people have talked about ad nauseum. But to me, it comes down to two drives, and that's all it comes down to for me. And that's not the final two drives, but basically the final two drives, the drive where the Eagles get the ball with 9 minutes left, down one, and then the drive after that where the Patriots get the ball with down five with 2.5 minutes left. And, what it comes down to is your defense making a play, right? And last year, everyone talks about, the Matt Ryan play was unbelievable, and it was. And then the Falcons do a horrendous job and call two passing plays. You're like, what the hell are you doing? But Flowers still has to make the play on that play. If Flowers doesn't get through and make the sack, then they don't have to throw it on third down, and then Chris Long doesn't force the holding play. So it's like – so you go back and forth and say, okay, well, they were bad decisions, but you still got to make the play, right? Pete Carroll shouldn't have thrown at the goal line. We agree on that. But if Malcolm Butler doesn't make the play, the Patriots lose the game anyway. So it's like – it's one of those things where you just – your defense has to step up and make a play, and the Eagles have the ball back down one with 9 minutes left. The Patriots have a chance to stop them before they even pick up a first down. On third down, they can't do it. They pick up a fourth down on their side of the field. They pick up another third down and then score on the next play on first down. And so to me, it's like, what else are you looking for? Like, you have to make a stop, and then the Patriots get the ball back. Everyone thinks they're going to score, and the Eagles defense makes a play where they hadn't really all game long, but they come through and make a play, and they win the game. And that's when you talk about Super Bowls, that's how you win the Super Bowl, is your defense has to make a play, not necessarily your offense.
Yeah, I mean, the defense is neither one, and they're both top five defenses as far as points allowed. And to get really one play in the entire game was insane. Like, and I think the Eagles defense, they have the excuse. Well, they had to face Tom Brady. The right. Patriots defense doesn't have that excuse. They got to face Nick Foles. I know they picked him off once, but they had no pressure on him. And the number of third down conversions, and it wasn't like it was third and one all the time. Like it was third and long a bunch, and they picked him up every time. And then obviously the fourth downs, you know, the fourth downs where, you know, they got a touchdown on one and then they put the game away on the other. I mean, you got to sort of tip your cap to Doug Peterson, because how many times did we watch the Patriots this year where they would put a team in a spot, you know, fourth and one, and they'd kick the field goal, or fourth and one and they would punt, and you would, and they're just, they were so in their own heads and they were afraid to give the ball back to the Patriots on the 40 or the, on the 50. But the Eagles knew that their defense wasn't going to get that stop. I mean, they got the one, but they knew overall they weren't going to get a bunch of those stops. And they said, our offense is going to have to win it. And they did. And so that's the biggest takeaway. You know, I think going forward, that's what teams have to do. Like, whether you're the Dolphins or the Steelers or whoever, when you face the Patriots, you're going to have to go for it. You know, the field goals aren't going to beat them and things like that. So you're going to have to be super aggressive, just like the Eagles were to win.
Right. Well, I think, and to me, and I think you're right about that. To me, just moving to the Patriots side of it here, I just feel like there's some unfit. I feel like if they had won this one, you'd kind of look at it and say, all right, Brady's got six, Belichick's got six. We want to win freaking 12. But, like, you know, we got six. Like, if we don't win another one in Brady's career and we're competitive, like, all right, he ends with six. And obviously, you know, we set the bar pretty high. But, like, at least you can say, all right, if we never wins again, we got six. Belichick's got six. We're tied with Pittsburgh, everything else, right? But now losing this one, it almost feels like there's, like, unfinished business. And now you're asking, you know, a 41-year-old quarterback to go back to his third consecutive Super Bowl to try to win. And you're like, man, like, they were so freaking close to winning this one. And it's like all they had to do was win this one and you'd feel so much better about it. And now it's like, as a fan, I'm almost like nervous for the future, because I'm like, you have to get that six now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was crazy because they had a chance to win 3 out of 4 for the second time in his career. And it would have been just the perfect way to cap it off. And there are so many uncertainties, you know, year in and year out. It does seem like almost the entire team should be back next year. Obviously, Malcolm Butler will be gone. That's a whole other thing. Deion Lewis could be gone. We'll see what else happens. I mean, McDaniels is staying. Patricia's gone. But – yeah, it's just, it was right there for him. You know, you would have been 6-2 in Super Bowls compared to 5-3, which is still, you know, nothing to sneeze at. And most people would kill to have that. But it just seemed like it was, you know, they were going to be back to back. You know, no team had been back to back since they were back to back. It seemed like it was lined up for, you know, this legacy to carry on. And now you're left with, I'm with you, you kind of, a bad taste in your mouth, and now you're coming back another year, and it seems like you're asking a lot for a 41-year-old quarterback to repeat sort of his performance from the year before.
Right. Yeah, it's tough, you know. And then, I mean, obviously they'll get some pieces back on defense, but, you know, how much can they really build on defense when you look at it and say, okay, who do they have coming back? Maybe Derek Rivers can come in and be a good player at end, and so you have him, Wise, and Flowers, and, you know, Hightower comes back healthy, but can you rely on him? I think the linebackers are in shambles. I don't know what the hell you're going to do a corner with your second corner. So it's like there's a lot of things up in the air, and, you know, it's an issue for sure. And again, if we had won this year, you'd say, all right, you know, shoot, like, we obviously want to compete and want to be in there and want to win, but, like, we got six now, so, like, you know, we're good for now. And if we don't win next year, we don't win next year. So what? But it's like, man, you know. Now you're like, shit, like, I really want to win, you know?
So, oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think they're still the favorite. And, you know, they're going to have, they got a first round pick. They got a couple of second round picks. I don't know how aggressive they're going to be in free agency, but if Hightower comes back, and he always misses a few games, but as long as there are a couple of regular season games and he's back for the playoffs, then you feel pretty good about that. Maybe they draft another linebacker. Maybe they draft a corner. Yeah. And you kind of go from there. There's still not that other team, though, in the AFC where you're too scared. Like, if Jacksonville, if Bortles, I think they're going to keep him just because they got that fifth year with him. that could hold them back for another year. You know, it's not until they get another quarterback where I would say, okay, they become maybe the team to beat. Pittsburgh's always good, but they can't figure out the Patriots. So you like them in a matchup against the Steelers, and then it's just kind of everybody else. So, you know, as much as it's going to be quite a task to get back there, they'd be the team that I would pick right now to get back to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, makes sense. It does make sense. All right, so do you have time for one Red Sox thing?
Yeah, what do you got?
All right. I'm wondering what you think about David Price. Because
not a fan.
He says it's going to be different this year.
Yeah, but I'm sure he will. I can't stand him. He's just annoying. I really can't stand him. And I know he's a good pitcher. He should be a great pitcher. At times he is. He just kind of bugs me. Like all his Twitter stuff and just the way he deals with the media, just everything about him kind of rubs me the wrong way. Obviously, he makes a zillion dollars, and that's fine. Good for him. But even going back to when he played for Tampa and some of his back and forth that he had with David Ortiz, I was like, this guy is kind of obnoxious. And then the Red Sox signed him. They needed an ace. They got him. He didn't pitch very well. Then he got shelled in the postseason. And then this last year, the whole thing with him and Eckersley, like I don't like the guy. And I hope he opts out of his contract after this year, but I doubt that he will because he has so much money coming his way.
Right. Well, that's the thing is that especially where Darvish got paid so much less than he's getting paid.
Right.
You kind of look at it and say, okay, well, even if he pitches really well, no one's giving him $30 million next year. So, you know, he's probably back for his last, 4 years. And you're
at $32 million a year or whatever it is.
Not great. Not great. So, but yeah, that's going to be interesting. You know, what's funny is that you guys were talking today about IT and it's, not that IT and Price are the same, but like it's almost that same kind of like annoyance where you're just like, would you just stop, just play the freaking game? You know what I mean?
It's weird because it's kind of funny. Maybe it's contradictory. I don't know, but I like when athletes talk. Like I like when they don't give the, hey, I'm just trying to go out there and win, or like, hey, I just want to work hard with my teammates. So I like when they talk, but then at the same time, you know, whether it's Isaiah or Price, don't get me wrong, I like Isaiah a lot more than I like Price, but they both sort of say things where you just sort of roll your eyes and you say, okay, enough. Like, talk about something else. Like move on. You guys are kind of obnoxious now.
Right. Well, I almost feel like it's almost like, what year was it 2011 when the Bruins were in the cup and, who the hell was the goalie in
Roberto Luongo?
Yeah, Luongo. And he's like, oh, you know, I've been pumping Tim Thomas' tires. You can't even say anything nice about me. And you're like, what are you, nuts, dude? Like, what do you expect people to think good things about you? Like,
is that what he's supposed to do? I don't think so.
And it's just, and you feel the same way about Price and IT. And IT's similar now because it's like, people can say bad things about you. It's going to happen. That's just the way it goes.
Right.
And just shut up and deal with it. And like, if you want to prove them wrong on the court, great. Prove them wrong on the court, but don't make your entire life's mission about, oh, see, yeah, that guy was, you know, talking junk about me and I'm going to totally prove him wrong and stuff. And you're like, just stop. The narrative is just, it's tired.
Well, that's one thing that both those guys do have in common is they're both very sensitive. You know, if you say something bad about either one of them, they're probably not going to be able to let it go.
Right, right. And IT has used it, I think, in his favor for the most part. Didn't work out in Cleveland, obviously. Right. But for the most part, it has. Yeah, but Price, to me, is like he gets in his own freaking head, and he just gets so worried about what people say about him and proving them wrong, and it's a mess. It's a mess.
It's a whole thing.
So, but yeah. So I don't know. So I guess that's it. Well, Red Sox wise, what do you think about them this year? I mean, obviously, we don't know if they're going to sign JD Martinez yet. Supposedly, they signed
Nunez. I guess it depends on a little bit on Martinez. I would say right now, and I guess this is kind of the chalk pick, but I do think, you know, the Yankees are better, but they should have enough talent to get a wild card. You know, like I don't think it's like a lost season or anything like that. I think they should be a playoff team, but it's probably that one game playing because the Yankees lineup is ridiculous. And their pitching, I think, is a little underrated. People look at it like, oh, they don't have the rotation. It's not bad. Severino's really good. And they got Sonny Gray for another year. Like, I don't think he sucks. They got some of the other older guys. They got a good bullpen. So I think the Yankees win the division. But I think the Red Sox should be right there for a wild card.
You know what's funny is I think the Red Sox – might be better this year than last year. I know they won the division last year, but realistically, they weren't better than the Yankees. The Yankees are much better than they were, and they just the Yankees kind of didn't find their groove until the end of the season. So I'm hoping that the Red Sox will kind of even be a little bit better this year than they were last year, even if that means just getting into the wild card team, but you know, maybe winning an actual playoff game instead of you know, getting swept. They didn't get swept, but they might.
It felt like they did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Well, I think that's all I got for you. Is there anything you want to add?
First of all, thanks for having me. I will add that. And I know you're a subscriber to the Triforce, which
I sure am.
It's the nicest compliment that you can be given these days, to listen to Mac and Goo, to listen to the Boxers, and to listen to hashtag dork. We really appreciate that. So thank you.
Yeah. So, well, of course, you know, it's great. And I've had Mac and Goo on before, so my listeners already know who they are. Hashtag dork is great. Boxers is awesome. I really like the new format that the Boxers have done.
Yeah, me and, too.
You know, it's funny because it's movies, but it's also comedy. Like, you guys are freaking hilarious, all three of you. And you have your own brand of humor for sure. But, you know, but it's good. It's really good. And, you know, anyone that isn't listening should be. So that's hashtag dork, Mac and Goo, and the Boxers as well. And yeah, just give those a listen. And obviously EEI, not tomorrow, but but EEI from 2 to 6
Monday, starting on Monday. We'll be back, baby. Yes.
Starting on Monday. So thank you. Well, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
No problem, man.
And is it Rich Keefe? Is it at Rich Keefe?
It is on Twitter at Keefe21 and at Dork Podcast.
There it is. Okay. Hit him up. Hit the follow button, subscribe, rate, review, all those good things.
Yes. So,
yeah. All right. Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. Have a good night.
Okay. So big thanks to Rich for coming on. Again, thought the interview came out really well. He's a really good guy. And again, if you're not following the Triforce, if you're not subscribed to the Triforce or listening to the Triforce, you should really check it out. That's Mac and Goo. It's the Boxers Podcast and it's the hashtag Dork Podcast. Really, really solid shows, good, funny shows. Obviously, Mac and Goo are the hosts of Mac and Goo. Wesley and Marcus, are the hosts of the Boxers. And then Rich and Ryan Davey are the hosts of the hashtag Dork Podcast. So definitely check that out. A lot of really good shows. And so, you know, follow along with them. And again, you know, it's a nice change of pace because it's not sports. It's, you know, movies and, you know, some pop culture and stuff. So some really cool stuff going on over there. So anyways, I do want to get into the segments. Before I do, I just want to, you know, hit just a few more Patriots topics. I really just, you know, Rich and I talked about it a little bit. I think this one's going to stick with me, this Super Bowl, and all the Super Bowls do. But, you know, like I said with him, I feel like there's this unfinished business where you just feel like, man, you know, if they had won this one, you feel like, if they ride off into the sunset with 6, you're okay with it. If they never get back there and they never win number 6, you're like, that's just tough. You know, it'd be tough to live with that one. And, you know, like Rich said, going 6-2 would be really nice. And 5-3 is still great, but 6-2 would have been really nice. So we're tied with Pittsburgh. Brady's got 6. He's got more than any other player that's ever played. So, you know, just some of those things from a fan standpoint, at least, you'd have some of that stuff. Not only that, but they lost to a backup quarterback in Nick Foles, who really isn't a starting level quarterback. I'm sorry, but he's not. He's not going to start for Philadelphia, and no one's going to give up a boatload to get him. So, you know, that's a tough thing for me as well. Yes, he was the MVP, and he deserved it. But, you know, again, like we talked about, the defense made one play, and the Patriots defense couldn't. I think it was more about the defense is not executing than it was necessarily the offense is executing. So, so we'll say it's tough, but hopefully they're back next year. Man, it's just, you know, frustrating. That one's definitely going to stick with me for a while. It's almost like the further away I get from the game, the more upset I am about the game. Not sure if everyone feels that way, but that's kind of the way I feel. So, that's where I'm at right now with the Patriots. So just wanted to kind of share that. Also the Borgia stuff, I do think, just going back to the Tomasi stuff that, Rich and I talked about a little bit. I just think that, you know, that's something that in the media, at least, is not brought up, and I know it's brought up by fans, and he makes a good point where he still lives with it every single day. Like, that's the first thing that anyone talks about with Tomasi. This is fans now that we're talking about, though. We're not talking about media members. We're not talking about people like that. So it's a little bit different. So people felt like he got off. He got away with it. And that's why I think it sticks in so many people's minds, is that they feel like almost like he got away with it. You know what I mean? And if he had been suspended or if something had happened, then you could say, okay, well, you know, he made a mistake, but it is what it is, right? Borges the same way. You kind of look at it and you say, okay, Borges now is suspended. And so, I mean, people didn't like Borges to begin with, right? So I guess maybe it'd be a little bit different. But, you know, say it happened to a writer. I don't know. Just pick a writer. I'm not going to give you one. Just pick one in your head that you kind of like and have some respect for. If it happened to him and he got caught, or her and they got caught, and you're like, all right, they served their time, right? They got suspended. They served their time. They made a mistake. We can move on. But Tomasi, it felt like, first of all, it was the morning before the Super Bowl. So you're like, are you kidding me? You know, horrible. Talk about horrible timing. It felt like they were piling on. And, you know, and then for it to not be true, and then nothing happened. He published some, you know, some half-hearted apology, it seemed like. And obviously the Herald did front and back page, you know, apologies. But it was just kind of like, man, you know, really would have liked to have seen something happen to Tomasi for that. You know, because did he just make it up? Did his source lie to him? Like, what happened, right? Because clearly someone wasn't being truthful. The question is, was it him or was it his source? And we don't know that. And so people take that to heart and they say, he didn't get away with it, so we're never going to let him forget it. And so I think that that's part of the reason why. So, you know, right or not, I understand where people are coming from, but I do also understand Rich's point where it's like, this guy has to live with this for the rest of his life. And every time they do anything, the majority of the public, the majority of the fans, that's the first thing they bring up. So I can see how that would be tough to take. So anyways, with that being said, let's move into some segments. First, I get the three-minute drill, and then we'll have this week in sports history. Okay, so here we get the timer going for our three-minute drill, and let's do it. All right, so I'm going outside sports here. I know there was a shooting the other day in Florida. I don't know when you're listening to this, but there was a shooting the other day in Florida. And look, I'm a teacher. For me personally, the biggest thing is the safety of our kids. Okay? And what really pisses me off, is people take the opportunity for something like this to happen to politicize it. I'm gonna push my agenda on you. So I'm gonna say this should happen, or this should happen, or this wouldn't help, or that wouldn't help, or this. Shut the hell up. Shut up. Stop pushing your agenda. Stop saying liberals are bad. Stop saying conservatives are bad. Stop saying just stop. If you're trying to further your political movement or your political party and you're using tragedies like this, what the hell is wrong with you? So to me, those people are the people that are wrong. And they're the problem. They're not the solution. They are the problem. And the biggest issue is this, and this is how I feel. The biggest issue is that the answer is somewhere in the middle, right? Will gun control fix everything? No, it won't. That's not going to happen. But will mental health stuff fix? No. So to me, the answer is somewhere in the middle. But the problem is that the people that feel that, you know, guns are sacred and we can't touch them would never admit that there's any fault ever with guns. And so they'll never come off that and say, well, maybe, you know, we should think about tightening some things up. Nope, can't do it. But then the other people on the other side are so convinced that it is the guns and not the mental health that they'll never say, well, maybe it's not all the guns' fault. Maybe there is some other stuff going on. And so everyone is kind of fighting at one end and unwilling to budge. And the answer is somewhere in the middle, as it typically is. The answer is somewhere in the middle. And people are so unwilling to move away from their edges. And it really just, to me, you look at it and say, you don't care about the kids. You don't care. Because what other explanation is there? You don't care about the safety of our kids. And I think part of the problem is that if we admit that there's a problem, then we have to admit that we're sending our kids to a place that may not be safe. That, yeah, it didn't happen in our town, but it could. It could. And so we don't want to admit that there's a problem because we don't want to think about that when our kids are in school. But I'm sorry, it is a problem. Whether the number's 18 or 6 is the beginning of the year, it's a problem and we need to deal with it. Wow, that was timing was pretty good there. So anyways, that I'll get off my high horse on that one, but that was for me. And again, no politics involved here. I don't want to get politics involved. I don't feel like I don't want to politicize this. Like I said, I don't want to get politics involved here. It's a sports show, but we need to talk about that. We need to talk about that. Everyone needs to sit down and talk about that and try to figure this out because what we got going on is not good enough. It's not good enough for the safety of our kids and the safety, frankly, of our teachers. You know, I mean, we look at it and I go into school and I think, yeah, it probably won't happen, but I mean, you never know. So, anyways, all right. So let's move on from that heavy topic, and we'll do some segments or we'll do some This Week in Sports History. So again, it's our This Week in Sports History segment. I'm just going to give you some events, few events. This time I got two events from this week in sports history. Okay. So the first one is February 15th, 1932. Eddie Egan becomes the only U.S. athlete to win gold in the winter and the Summer Olympics. 1932, he won gold bobsledding. And in 1920, he won gold boxing. So 12 years apart, wins two separate golds. He's the only U.S. athlete to ever win a gold in the Summer Olympics. And in the, or he was the first, at least, to win a gold in the Summer Olympics and in the Winter Olympics. Pretty crazy there. And that, again, that was February 15th. 1932. And actually, on the same day, 64 years later, February 15th, 1996, Bill Belichick was fired as head coach of the Cleveland Browns. Of course, the Browns were moving to Baltimore and they wanted a fresh start, so they fired Bill Belichick. He was hired by the Patriots. He coached the defense and he went to his first of 9 Super Bowls with the Patriots, so far at least. Less than a year later, okay? Pretty good year for him. And then, of course, Parcells left to go to the Jets. Belichick went with him. And the rest, as they say, is history. And a few years later, he was with the Patriots. What, 4 years after that, he was coaching the Patriots. So, you know, and 6 years after that, he was, 6 years after he got fired by the Browns, he was celebrating his first Super Bowl championship as a head coach. So things can change very quickly. And obviously, that was not a great day for Bill Belichick, but looking back on it, was a pretty good day for Bill Belichick and certainly a heck of a day for New England fans. So so that was February 15th, 1996. And that pretty much does it for the show tonight. Really appreciate Rich Keefe coming on again. I really think, to be honest with you, you know, for those of us that have been listening, you know, when we listen to the 2 to 6 show on Sports Hub, and there's a 2-6 show on EEI, and I feel like the 2-6 show on EEI has gotten exponentially better since the addition of Rich Keefe, and I really feel like it's not going to be too long until, you know, Felger and Maz might be taking not necessarily a back seat, but some of those viewers and some of those listeners to Felger and Maz maybe aren't going to be listening quite as much, because I feel like, you know, the three of them, you know, Dale, Hawley, and Keefe have something really special going on. I think it's a really, really good show. And if you're not listening to it on your commute home, I strongly suggest just giving it a listen. I really do think they do a great job. So definitely check them out. And like I said, hashtag Torque Podcast, check that out. Mac and Goo, check that out. And the Boxers Podcast, also check that out. So now I've had two members of the Triforce gone. So I guess I'm going to have someone from the Boxers come on too. So, I guess look out for that, I suppose. I don't know if either of them want to come on, but I'll work on it. We'll see what happens. So anyways, that does it for me tonight. I really appreciate it. Listen, find us on iTunes. Rate, review, subscribe. We'd appreciate all that. On Twitter and Instagram, I am at WeekendWarPod. And again, weekend is no E, so it's just WKND. WARPOD. Okay. And then we're also on Facebook, Weekend Warrior Podcast on Facebook, and also email. So weekendwarpod@gmail.com. And again, Weekend War, Weekend is no E. So it's WKNDWARPOD@gmail.com. And that pretty much does it. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Listen and rock to what it is that you want. Warriors, you'll need to tune in.